When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to I'm So Obsessed, where we talk with actors, artists, and creators about their work, career, and current obsession. I'm your host, Patrick Holland, and my guest is the Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, musician, and actor, Elijah Allen Blitz. He played Jeffrey on the show The Shield, and now directs virtual reality experiences like Take Every Wave, Layered in VR, which was nominated for an Emmy, as well as VR experiences for Michael Pollan's book, How to Change Your Mind, and for the Ken Burns documentary, Defying the Nazis, The Sharps War. His latest project is the Disney Plus short film and augmented reality experience, Remembering, which stars Brie Larson. Let's take a listen to part of the trailer.
Have you ever forgotten an idea? What happens to them? Where do they go? But this isn't your normal story.
We are in the world of imagination.
Sometimes grown-ups forget their imaginations.
So you've done a lot of different things. You've worked on TV shows. You've made films. You're a writer and director. Kind of what is your background and how did you end up doing something like Remembering with Disney?
So, I mean, I've really been making movies since I was little. Like I remember, you know, I used to just play imaginary world in my backyard and just like create these worlds. And then as soon as I got my hands on an old VHS recorder, I started trying to like translate what I was imagining into making movies. And I had two younger brothers and, you know, we would, you know, come up with stuff and just, you know, make whatever we could. And I even remember being in, you know, fourth or fifth grade and them saying like, okay, well, what part do you want to be in the school play? And I said, well, actually I want to direct the play. And, you know, they actually, to their credit, that Santa Barbara Charter School actually let me do it. They had a director, but I was allowed to direct some of the scenes. So I was like,
Do you remember what play?
It was A Comedy of Errors. The Shakespeare play, A Comedy of Errors.
Yeah, that's a big play. That's even scenes from that play. That's a big play to direct.
it was fun. Listen, I mean, for me, it's just like, it's all storytelling. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, for me, I'm very dyslexic. And so in my academic career, I actually only got one A ever in my entire academic career, which was not that long because I did drop out of high school. But that one A that I got was in a social studies class by a teacher named John Sigel Baitner. He gave me an A because he was the only teacher that let me make movies instead of write papers.
It was
an incredible thing. And because I was able to show that I understood the material, it was just, I think in a different way. And so when I say I've always been making movies, I really mean that. And it's like, this is my favorite thing. This is my art form. It is the most collaborative art form. And it is just something that I love to do. And it's almost like how my brain thinks. I feel like I almost dream in movies. Like there's objective perspectives and there's shots and there's different things. And it's all this stuff going on.
Well, and when you're talking about like putting those movies together, if you're shooting them on like, I'm guessing like, not to talk about, well, it's an old brand, but like Sony Handycam, are you like then transferring that and using VCRs to edit? I mean, talk to me a little bit what that process was like growing up.
So growing up, it was, you know, on the old VHS, where you're literally recording right to the VHS tape. So it would be like, okay, if we have to do another take, all right, rewind, like pause right at that frame, and then action again. You know, it was literally editing in camera like that.
That is amazing. Yeah. And then you could tell a scene was shot more than one time because of the turner grading.
it glitches for a second. You know exactly what I'm talking about, Patrick. That's it. But then I remember I got my first Hi8 camera when I was maybe like 13 or something. And that was a game changer. And also that was like when iMovie came out. So I remember like having the first generation of iMovie on like this, like iMac that we got. And it was just the biggest deal in the world. It was like, oh my gosh, I can actually like put titles in there. And I remember doing like rating my own movie. Like the first, we made this like 30 minute horror movie, my brothers and I, and like all the babysitters, my grandma was in it. Everybody that I could cast was in it. And we would, I put in the beginning, I was like, yeah, like no speaking during the movie. And like, this is rated PG-13. And like, I added all the little titles and
stuff. Wait, what was it? What was the name of the movie? Do you remember the name of it?
The name of that movie is called The Will, and it was all about. I mean, there's lots to it. It was all about this old lady's will, played by my grandma, and all these people were on the will, and everybody who was on her will was dying and getting killed, and it was like, who is it that is killing these people trying to get them?
Wait, and is your grandma is your grandma in the movie grandma dead? Because I would think the will would mean, or is it something like, oh, she's gonna get dead?
No, so the story is she had to stay alive, because like it was only like the people on the list. I don't know if I want to spoil the movie, but like basically it was somebody on the list that was lower down on the list that was, you know, trying to get in there. But oh my gosh, we used so much fake blood and so much red food coloring that like we stained so much of my mom's stuff. It was like, I gave my mom a producer credit on the movie because of how much fake blood she paid for it.
I love it. I love it. And what's fun is like, and to relate it a little bit to remembering, is you see, you talk about imagination, you see that love of imagination as the central theme of that, not only as an audience member, as a character. So growing up, you've always been making this stuff. How do you get into, especially I'm curious about AR and VR, and I know you've done VR experiences. This is an AR experience. How does that like kind of relate to the work you've done? And how is that different from like the TV and film stuff you've done?
Oh yeah, I mean, they're all entirely different mediums and they're all storytelling. So like that when it comes down to it, it's like, I make music, I act in things as well, but it's all storytelling. And to me, like making movies is the culmination of all of these different art forms that I love just put together. And it's also the most collaborative art form because it takes all of these different people from all different walks of life and all different, you know, experiences to, you know, come together and make something. So for VR with me, it was really in the last 8 years that I've been predominantly focused on VR stuff. And I had the opportunity to later that year shoot a project with my friends in Haiti. We did like a 360 piece, and that just snowballed. And I then all of a sudden was like, oh, you do VR? And I got to work with Ken Burns to do a companion piece for his documentary about the Holocaust. Then I started working with my friend Van Jones, and we've created a series called The Messy Truth, which is designed to be a curriculum for empathy, where we actually ended up casting all Marvel actors that you know, just came on board and were like, you know, we're in to help support this because they believed in what we were trying to do. And the goal of that project was to put the viewer in someone else's shoes. Because from the beginning, or from the resurgence of VR, everyone talked about it, the ultimate empathy machine. Now it's in every Oculus Quest. But you could look down, you could see your hands without having gloves on or without any holding controllers, and you could see your hands, and you would have hands of a different race or a different gender, and you'd be completely embodied in someone else's shoes. And they're all based on true stories, and there were these 3 to 5 minute experiences. And, you know, that's something that we're still working on. And that's, you know, something I will never give up on, because I feel like if we can actually create something that can live on as a curriculum for empathy, that's something that I care so deeply about. And the power of VR, where your mind is actually believing what you're seeing, not as something you've watched, but as something that you've actually experienced because of the power of this medium, what can we do with it? So that's really one of the main projects that I've, you know, did in the VR space. I've also worked with my dear friend, Laird Hamilton. We shot a 360 piece of him riding the longest wave in the world down in Peru. And through that, it was probably 3 years ago, I got connected with the Disney Studio Lab through my VR work. And we had, you know, stayed in contact. And I said, oh, you know, during the pandemic, we put together this little short film that we were thinking of shooting with our neighbor, who's this little 6-year-old girl. And, you know, Bree and I have been working on it. And he was like, oh, well, we're interested. And I was like, okay. So we started talking, and the idea to create an AR experience where you hold up your phone or your tablet or one day your AR glasses, you know, and it's something that comes off of your screen and into your living room is something that I've been wanting to do for over 5 years. And I was always told that it was impossible. And so it's really fitting that I get to work with the company where Walt Disney said, it's always kind of fun to do the impossible. And so to have this, you know, to have this team of just incredible technologists and innovative thinkers and just supporters of filmmakers in the studio lab at Disney to just jump in and say, you know, we don't know how this is going to be done, but we're going to figure this out together. And that's really where this began. I've dabbled in AR, but this is my first, you know, real piece of AR that I've gotten to be part of creating that is actually available to the world.
I want to ask you specifically about, it was the Ken Burns virtual reality experience around the Holocaust. Yeah. And it was a compliment, or it was with his, what was the documentary, Defying the Nazis?
Defying the Nazis.
That's, yeah. How did you even get involved with Ken Burns in that? And then, like, how much did he know about VR enough to know that this would have be very impactful as an experience?
Yeah, so I actually got connected because, so the film is about this couple, this American couple that during World War II went over to Europe and tried to save as many people as possible. And I was close with, and still am, Artemis Jakowski, who actually co-directed the film with Ken. And that's where the initial conversation began around it. Like, we could create this, you know, companion piece with a, you know, a VR experience to the film when it comes out on PBS. And it, you know, that was how I got connected was through Artemis, because he's used their grandson, the Sharps is the name of the couple. It's called Defying the Nazis, The Sharps War. And it's an incredible documentary and absolutely worth seeing. But for that, one of the most impactful things, I'm not sure if you got to see this, but what we had the opportunity to do, because we recreated a moment in there where the wife, Martha Sharp, was able to save 27 Jewish children and got them on this boat to the U.S. And so we put you in the perspective of standing on the boat, and you would see the real survivors and the children that were on that boat that are now in their 80s and 90s in the sky, and they'd be telling their stories about what it was like to be separated from their parents and be on that boat, and you're looking at the water and then seeing the Statue of Liberty for the first time. And we got to show that experience to one of the women. Her name was Amelie Diamant-Holstrom, who was actually on that boat. So to be able to show a Holocaust survivor a recreation of her rescue in VR is something that I will never forget, and I am so honored to even play as a part in that. And that's online. There's a video of her watching it, and it's so powerful, not only her watching it, but then her son seeing it, because her son is, you know, he's on camera talking about this, and he said, his name's Eric, and he was in tears, and he was saying, I've heard this story my whole life, and now I actually get to see what it was like. So
clearly the Holocaust is such not only a historical event, it's such a tragedy. It obviously shaped the modern world we're in. But could you just imagine at a more mundane level, getting to experience something that your mom or dad went through, let alone something that profound? It just blows my mind. I think that's kind of where, going back to especially VR, I think that's where VR is a bit more transformative for really just taking you out of the real world into smacking you down in the middle of a different reality. It's tremendous. So just going basic, not even AR, VR kind of thing, but obviously when you're thinking up an idea, you have to think of the experience as the viewer of those experiences, which I know even if you're doing film or TV, you're kind of thinking that through a bit, but there's also the expression of the artist. How do you balance that? Like, hey, if someone's looking down and they're seeing someone's different hands, like that's such an impactful thing. Versus like, oh, if they look down and the technology doesn't work out, they don't see that hand. How does that tell the story? How do you kind of bridge that or balance that as you're working on like these projects and experiences?
Yeah, so that with VR specifically, it's actually very different in that aspect, because you can't think about crafting a beautiful frame, because you have no idea where the audience is going to be looking at any given moment. So you have to more think about creating an experience, an entire world where no matter where they're looking, it's still progressing the plot and they're still getting the story that you're telling as you're in this experience. So that's been one of the biggest things. And actually, I feel like that's only benefited me when I get to come back to making traditional film, which is what I love, because then, you know, it's like, oh, I don't have to worry about 360 degrees. I just got to like make a beautiful rectangle. Oh, let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, let alone the accounts of film. I've also like heard stories of people like, yeah, we all wear black and lay on the floor. So like, if you look around, we're not in the shot. And I mean, it's kind of insane, but you got to approach it that way. Swinging back to remembering a little bit. I want to break this down a little bit. So first of all, anyone who's listening, just go stop this podcast for 10 minutes, watch the film. It's very easy to participate in at the AR experience. It's, I would say, delightful is the first thing that comes to mind. Also a little, I found it inspiring. And then come back and join us in this conversation. But as far as remembering, so now you kind of have an interest in filming it. This Brie Larson person, I hear she's a pretty good actor too. So it's nice to have her involved. So as you're like, hey, we got to, I can understand why you might say that. What was the first thing you did once you're like, okay, we're going to do this? Are you writing the script? Are you doing storyboards? How does that work out?
I've been so interested in this for so long, and just in my own creative process, exploring that. And that's where the script started. It was go diving into that. But then our neighbor, Dusty, this incredible 6-year-old who I've actually known since she was two. I remember Brie, it was during the pandemic. Brie came back because we had kind of, potted up with them. She's our neighbor. And Brie came back and was like, you should do a movie with Dusty. And I was like, of course, yes, I love this. Like, let's figure this out. So I started working on the script. And the AR experience was always something that was there. Like I said, it's been something I'd wanted to do even before this idea of the script had come to me. It wasn't something that's a gimmick. It wasn't something that's like a piece of ancillary content. It's something that actually was thought of from the beginning and to incorporate it with the entire piece, where you can just watch the film. If you don't feel like downloading the app and going through the AR experience, you can just watch the film completely as it is, standalone, and it tells a beautiful story, and you would not notice that there's any difference. But if you wanted to take it a step further, you have the option to actually bring this world of imagination into your living room. Writing the script, that part was on me, but really when we were talking about the world of imagination, that was a lot on Dusty. We had Dusty come over before we started filming, and we said, what does the world of imagination look like? And she talked to us about, unicorns made of moonlight and dolphin clouds and, fairies that slide down rainbows and waterfalls and all of these things. And it was like, okay, yeah. I mean, first of all, there was so much more that couldn't make it into the short film that she talked about. But it was like, because also then we shot on the volumetric stage. Are you familiar with that technology?
I am, but let's explain for people who might not be familiar what that is exactly. It's also really cool that you got to do that.
It's very cool. To me, that is like the ideal. I mean, just as a director, and also I imagine for actors, it's just the best. So a volumetric stage is an enormous, I mean, all stages are different, but people most know about them from The Mandalorian was really the kind of pioneers of this and what they've done with ILM. We shot ours at a studio called Nant Studios in El Segundo, and they're incredible. And it's a huge, so like almost 360 degrees of these like 25 foot high LED panels that you can create an entire CG environment and then basically set dress the entire, area in between, and you can then film within that. So everything that Dusty and Brie were looking at was real things. There wasn't like, it's all green screen and hold up a tennis ball and pretend that that's, something over there. It was all real. And like when you see the shot where the idea is, shooting across the sky and you see it reflected in Dusty's eyes, that was a real reflection off of the stage.
That's because like the reflections look so insane to me. I mean, just knowing how much that takes, that's crazy.
Yeah, well, that's like one of the many benefits of it is that like the reflections, it's just there. It's not something you had to add in post. And also her reaction. When you see her react to that thing, that was just the first take of her watching that shooting star and being like, whoa, it's like that was real. That was all genuine. And actually, well, one of the questions you asked about, working with Dusty, I used to teach kindergarten and first grade. And I always love working with kids. And so Dusty is not an actress, but she, we never called action when she was on set. I told her that the camera was her robot friend named Alexa, and you guys were in a staring competition to not look at each other's eyes. And we were just rolling. We'd have conversations and we were trying, get her to say some of the things that were in the script. And sometimes she said things that were not in the script that made it into the film that are incredible.
I used to teach like children's theater and part of the thing we would do is like life skills through stage skills kind of stuff. And these kids would have like much better resumes than any of the teachers, by the way, like, oh, I'm in a Volkswagen commercial. You're like, well, great. You still have to listen to me. But it was, it's so much fun. And then going back to the writing a little bit, and I'm guessing this is a line you wrote. One line that stuck out to me in remembering was, the only thing that separates us is time, and time isn't real. It's like, okay, I did not expect that line. I did not expect that line from a child. Can you talk to me? I know within the context of what's going on in remembering, it makes complete sense, but where did that come from for you?
Gosh, you know, yeah, that was one of the lines in the original script. And it's something that, you know, the Leonard Cohen song where he talks about like the crack and everything, and the crack is where the light gets in. And it's like, to me, the idea that time isn't real. Time is a very valuable tool. We use time. We were able to set up this Zoom, like, to talk through time because we use it as a tool, but to not be limited by it, not let it control us, and to let us control it and be like, use it as a tool, but also acknowledge that, like, it is a man-made construct, that there's something so freeing in that. And the goal with, you know, lines like that was to just give the audience a little crack of light and to say, like, you know, you can question your environment, you know, just because you were told this is the way things are. You know, you were talking about reviewing the iPhone. It's that, you know, Steve Jobs thing where you talk about, like, reality is made up by people that were no smarter than you are, you know, and remembering that, you know, and just like, really, like, there's almost an element with the AR experience that's in some ways like a Trojan horse for adults, where they think they're going to see this cool piece of technology, but ideally, if they really take it in, it's something that can bring them closer to their own imagination and their world of creativity and their inner child and what that actually is in their own experience, you know. And that, if we're able to do that through this process and this technology, then we have succeeded in a major way that is above and beyond my wildest dreams.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I want to acknowledge, Elijah, that you're on a podcast called I'm So Obsessed, and I'd like to know, what's your current obsession?
Oh my gosh. I mean, this last week has just been all about remembering. And like, I waited till midnight on last Thursday when it actually launched on the platform. I waited to see it and like to see it pop up on the like home screen on the carousel page of, you know, Disney Plus. It was like, it was a surreal experience because, you know, I've watched this probably literally 1,000 times, you know, different cuts and going through every single thing we had to go through. And to click play on it that night on Disney Plus, I was able to see it objectively because I knew that what I was watching, everybody else that had Disney Plus, it has access to it. And there's something so incredible about that. So it's like, I don't know. It's weird to say, like, oh, I'm so obsessed with this thing I just made. But it's like, it's,
I mean,
real.
It makes
it's
sense. Like, it makes sense. You're in the middle of it. And also, I relate to that a little bit, especially you've put so much time in something to see that reaction. But also, I think there's like, not a satisfaction, but it's got to be different because it's literally in your living room or wherever your TV is and your coffee table's there. It's like, it's not in a studio. It's not in an ideal environment. It's just in the messy real world you have. It's got to be so satisfying.
Yes, it's incredible. And that actually is something that we have noticed, that you do have to kind of like clear the space in front of your TV. You know, like, you can't have a coffee table right there. I have noticed that will throw off the device. So like, as much as you can clear out a space in front of your TV, that will, you know, make the experience work. But like, you know, in the future, as we progress and as these things become more and more ubiquitous, it's you know, there's going to be flowers sprouting out of your coffee table. It's going to take your whole living room into account, and you'll have a different experience based on whatever your living room setup is.
Well, it's funny, we're talking about like Apple just a second ago. I think that there's like, I want to say it's like here, even Amazon, you can now just like hold your phone up and tap and see, get a preview of that IKEA dresser. What's it going to look like? Does it clash? You know, it's insane that we can do that. Okay, I feel silly asking you this question, but what was it like working with Brie? I know you guys have a different relationship, like off camera, so to speak, but what is that like? And what was that like for her working with Dusty?
Oh, so working with Brie is like, that's to both, for both of us. I think I'm, you know, I don't want to speak for her, but for me, that's ideal. I mean, first of all, she is the best. She is an absolute master of the craft. She is a genius in my opinion. And I obviously am biased, but I also say that from like being around her and seeing her work. And it's not just her ability to understand the flow and set and how everything works, but also her taste. Her taste is just spectacular. And so to be so aligned with that and to be able to just be on set, you know, the That was the first thing. I think the first thing we shot was The Messy Truth, her episode of Messy Truth, which we, you know, won an Emmy for. So it was like, okay, we got off on a good foot. But I remember
an award-winning good foot.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember us coming back from set that first day and just like we were both in the car and was like, wow, you didn't get on my nerves at all. And I was like, yeah, you know, like this is incredible because we have such a shorthand and such a rapport because we trust each other so implicitly that we're able to communicate in such a way where it just streamlines the process. And I trust her and she trusts me. And then also that she, you know, knows Dusty. And it was like, so just that was like really both of us just sitting there and just, you know, you, cause she's also incredible working with kids. And so just the patience and just sitting there and just, you know, talking it through and even, you know, to get Dusty to say that line, you know, time isn't real. You know, it's like, basically, I think every single take after she said it, she would say, oh, don't worry about that. Cause time isn't real. And she would take a handful of grass from the ground. She'd throw it up in the air. She'd go grass party. You know,
I mean, grass parties are underrated. I feel people don't have
underrated in a 7-8 minute short film. It might not have made sense. So I'm like, we're already kind of like, yeah, blowing people's minds with time isn't real. And then like, well, what does grass party have to do with this?
So, yeah. Well, and imagining you in that volume with, you know, like an Ari Alexa and all this stuff and real, it's like, oh yeah, time is real right now. You know,
well, I mean, but that was the thing. It was like, you know, we allotted enough time because there was also so much trust that was given to, because I trusted Dusty and I knew what Dusty was capable of. And there was so much trust that I feel so grateful for from Disney and the Disney Studio Lab to trust me to say, don't worry, like this girl's going to get this. Like, they're like, well, you know, should we cast an actress? Like all these things. And it's like, no, just trust me. Like this girl, we will get it. Like it is there. It's all there. We didn't have to do reshoots. You know, it was all there. And it was just taking the time and letting her be her and just, you know, telling the story because like the world of imagination is where she lives. You know, we've gotten to show this. I mean, some of the best stuff is, you know, showing it to people, kids and adults. But like when we showed the world of imagination to kids, I remember the first time we had a room full of kids and we're like, so what do you guys think about the world of imagination? Is this look about right? And all the kids were like, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's about right.
So you've done a lot of different mediums, a lot of different work. And one of the shows that you worked on a lot was The Shield. And clearly people have like are fanatical about that show and it's been off the air for a while, but when you think back to the show and working on it, what comes to mind for you?
Oh gosh. I mean, that story is really incredible because at the time I was acting, I was 15 and it was the day I dropped out of high school and I withdrew myself from high school and I came back and I told my parents and they're like, what? And that night I got a call from my manager and said, you just booked this part on The Shield. And my parents looked at me like, you lucky bleep, you know, like it was just like, I couldn't believe it. And it bought me a freedom to really get to explore my passion and what I wanted to do. Cause I knew that the way that the school system was set up at the time wasn't right for me. And it just did not work in the way that my brain worked. And I knew what I wanted to do. And so that, first of all, getting to work with Michael Chiklis and that whole incredible team. I mean, there was so much that I just was an honor to be a part of that incredible show. Cause also that show did change so much and, you know, in a similar way to The Sopranos and Breaking Bad, like they just redefined what that meant to have an anti-hero. And there's, you know, so much historical stuff around that show. But for me personally, it really gave me a freedom and it bought me some time to really get to explore and do what I love more without the pressure of everybody being like, you're 15, you just dropped out of high school. Like what's going on? You know?
You're like, I have a handy cam and I'm going to make movies. okay. So when you think back at that time or you think throughout your career, what's a piece of advice you were given that when you were younger made sense, but still holds true today for you?
You know, everything that I would say, there's, you know, different one-liners, like, you know, it all comes down to persistence. And like everything, that's how this project got made. Like I said, the amount of times that I was told that this was impossible, this thing that is now on Disney Plus that you were able to get to talk about and you've got to experience, and hopefully anybody with Disney Plus can experience, that was told to me that it was impossible many times. Even during the making of it, it was not possible. It's something that we just stayed persistent on and just kept going. And to me, I like to say I'm a dyslexic. So when I hear no, it means on.
Yes. I love it. I'll take that. That's a great one.
Yeah. So it's really, I mean, out of all the different things and quotes and like advice that I've been given, which there is so much, I think that that is probably in some ways the most important is just the persistence, especially if you feel it so deeply in your heart and you know whatever it is that you're going for, just keep going, keep going. And there is something to it. And, you know, it impossible is only impossible until it's not.
So we like to do a thing called pick one on our show. I give you a couple of choices. You select one. It doesn't mean the thing that you select is better than the other, and you're very encouraged to talk it all out. So can we play pick one, Elijah?
Yes, please.
All right, so pick one. The first one is TV or film. Pick one.
I mean, it depends on the TV. It depends on the film. Like, come on, man. Like, you get the quality and caliber of television being made these days. It's like you like there's some films that, you know, need to be, that are an hour and a half to 2 hour stories. And there are some things that are 8 hours, they're 9 hours, they're 100 hours. It just depends on the content. And it depends on the caliber and quality of the story that's being told.
Do you think we could ever get to a point where we're having like, not an 8 hour straight experience, but 8 hour, like imagine that Remembering was a like 20 minute, 30 minute show that had 10 or 12 episodes and had that AR component. Do you ever think we'll get to that point?
Oh yeah, that's one of the things we're talking about is because there's so many unanswered questions in Remembering. It's like, what is the idea that she forgot? You know, does everyone's world of imagination look the same? You know, what is it for other creators? Like, what if an idea was forgotten and not remembered? What happened? So we're talking about either whether it's a series or it's a feature, but there's so much more to be explored even in that specific space. And then also as the technology becomes more available, and hopefully one day you can tell me when that will be, we'll have these AR glasses. I'm looking to you, Patrick.
Elijah, it's funny because I'm thinking about, God, this is a long, long time ago. I worked at the Apple store as like a retail person. This is right after Steve Jobs passed away. And there was this very kind of like a private company memorial service. And they had Johnny Ive speak about the thing that Steve Jobs was so good about was the idea and being able to protect an idea from like criticism. So you pitch an idea out and it wouldn't be yes, no. You hear all those things about Steve Jobs being a very impassioned person for creativity. But when it came to the idea stage, he respected the idea. He respected the fact that you needed to protect ideas in order for them to develop or fail, right? And I think I was thinking about that was why I watched Remembering as well.
Okay, I'm honored, man. Not only is he a huge inspiration to me, but I feel like that, and even Dusty says it at the end. You know, ideas is just they're so fragile, and it's not something that we can just take for granted. And even in the beginning, Bree's decision to pick up the phone or to continue with the idea she just got, like that is something that we all face in even micro moments every day. You know, of what are we prioritizing? So anyway, I really appreciate that you got that from me.
I hate asking the second one because I feel like we've had such a great conversation about AR, VR, but pick one, AR or VR.
I mean, in what context, man? I mean, what use case? Like, it's like, what is it going to be used for? You know, they're entirely different mediums.
I think that is the point. And I think it's funny because we do have people, I've reviewed a VR headset and I said to someone, it's like kind of reviewing the Mona Lisa, but you can only show the picture frame, where it's like, you can't see, you don't get to see the painting, but you're like, oh, it looks so cool. It's like, and it's, that's the hardest part about selling, especially VR, whereas AR, since I know what the real world is like, I see that, and being able to complement that with like something that's adding to that, that's augmenting that, it's just tremendous. So I agree, it's very different.
I could tell you one thing about that, because I do feel that an hour closer to closer than VR, AR will be our more immediate future. I do believe that will be the next phase of how we interact with technology. That we're going to go, instead of like walking around with our heads down, twiddling our thumbs on the phone, it will be upright like Tony Stark in Iron Man or Minority Report, interacting with digital space around us. I do feel like that is a more, that's going to be coming soon than the Oasis.
I agree completely. So this last one, pick one, Brie Larson in Room, Brie Larson in Captain Marvel, or Brie Larson in Scott Pilgrim versus the World?
Oh gosh, man. I mean, again, it's like what are we comparing? Like, how do you compare Room to Captain Marvel? I mean, the impact that I've seen Captain Marvel and Bree's character and what she's done with that have on, you know, specifically little girls and just kids, like it just and adults, the impact that that's had on the world is just spectacular. And it is so empowering and beautiful, and it's so important. And the work that she did in Room is phenomenal. And
it is amazing. Different. Yeah.
It's another world, but it's about, I mean, it's, you know, how many people have seen Room compared to how many people have seen Captain Marvel. So it's just how you can't compare the two.
And there's only one that's on Disney Plus. Stop kidding. I'm totally kidding. Before we go though, is there anything else you want to bring up that we didn't get to talk about or anything you want to mention?
Oh man. You know, I really appreciate that you got to see the short film and that you actually got to experience the AR experience and that you actually got it. You know, I really just have loved talking with you about this because it is something that means so much to me, and exploring where ideas come from and what is that and what is the world of imagination and how can we all, adults, children, all of us, how can we connect deeper to that? And how can we, if we've forgotten it, how can we connect back to it? That's my focus with VR, is how to do stuff like that and how to actually connect people more. Yeah, because it is so powerful.
Elijah, it has just been a delight talking to you. I hope we get to talk again sometime, and yes. I wish you nothing but the best. And I hope so many people get to watch Remembering. It's such a great experience.
Thank you so much for taking the time, Patrick. I really appreciate talking with you, and I appreciate your enthusiasm.
Remembering is now streaming on Disney Plus, and while it's great on its own, I definitely recommend downloading the app for the AR portion. I'm So Obsessed was created by our executive producer, Danielle Ramirez. Our editor and lead producer is Sophia Fox-Sowell. And this episode was produced by Rebecca Fleener. Please take a moment and subscribe to I'm So Obsessed on your favorite podcast app. Follow the show on Twitter @I'm So Obsessed Pod. And until next time, take care.